Please, 315.
Accept the North and Northeast Neighborhood Housing Strategy Oversight Committee 2017 report.
Colleagues, presented before us today will be the North Northeast Housing Strategy Oversight Committee annual report. This is the third annual report on behalf of the North Northeast Oversight Committee, and this report outlines the progress made in alignment with the 2014 North Northeast Housing Strategy. This report also outlines some of the challenges that have been faced in accomplishing the goals of the strategy. Yet, this report is not business as usual, and I'm sure it's no secret to anybody in this chamber today that I was highly disappointed when I received this report. I believe that despite the good faith efforts of the city and our partners, and especially the oversight committee members themselves, we're way off the mark relative to the original promises around this strategy when it was first put forward over 3 years ago. Rather than coming in and having people 3 weeks ago talk about the problems, I actually wanted us to have a more frank conversation about the problems and the solutions and who could do what to get us back on track with regard to the original commitments around this project. So I requested then that it be removed from the council agenda and brought back after the Housing Bureau had had a chance to address the concerns that were raised in the report by the Oversight Committee and respond with some potential outlined solutions. I specifically requested that both the immediate and sustained actions were presented that deal with the challenges of both program participants as well as some challenges that we're seeing amongst the partner organizations. These challenges shouldn't come as a surprise to any of us here. We as Portlanders are aware of the history of North and Northeast Portland. We've seen how the city's actions over the last 40 years have led to the involuntary displacement of some of our most vulnerable historical residents in these neighborhoods, which is why this report and the work of the Portland Housing Bureau and the work of the Oversight Committee is so critically important. By continuing to support the use of the preference policy, and I want to be very clear, I am a strong supporter of the preference policy. It's been instrumental and important in prioritizing historically displaced families for rental and home ownership opportunities and continuing to assess and adjust how home ownership funds are made available to participants. We're going to continue down the path of fully implementing the North Northeast Housing Strategy. To present the North Northeast Neighborhood Strategy Oversight Committee annual report, we're joined today by the Oversight Committee Chair, Dr. Stephen Holt. Thank you, sir, for being here again. I think this is our sixth time together in less than a week. And committee member Dr. Lisa Bates. And, of course, we have Leslie here representing the Housing Bureau as well. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you. Commissioners, good to see you as well. Thank you, Mayor, for your thoughtful introduction. I think that helps to set the context of what is in front of each of you, and hopefully you've had a chance to look it over and think about it. What we're going to do is I want to spend some moments doing a brief and kind of high-level overview related to our work and the work that is so central to addressing such a marginalized and displaced people. And then we're going to kind of highlight what I'm going to call the challenges that surfaced during 2017, and Dr. Bates will speak to those. So I'm going to do the high-level overview, and then Dr. Bates will speak to the challenges we faced, and then we'll I'll come back and make a few other comments. So today is briefly an overview. We'll talk about the charge, the engagement, what we've done around preventing displacement, creating new home ownership opportunities and rental units, and we'll talk about our preference policy. So the charge of the Oversight Committee, for those who may not know, is that the North Northeast Portland Neighborhood Housing Strategy Community Oversight Committee is created and tasked with the responsibility of reviewing and monitoring the development and implementation of policies and programming associated with North Northeast neighborhood housing or neighborhood housing opportunities and the dollars accompanying that activity. The scope of the Oversight Committee is to advise on, review program proposals and plan development, to monitor the implementation of policy and programming and associated outcomes, to advise the Housing Director and Housing Commissioner on progress, issues, concerns associated with the North Northeast Housing Neighborhood and Interstate Urban Renewal TIF LIFT funds, and then that Portland Housing Bureau, and I would say along with the Housing Commissioner, would inform the Oversight Committee of decisions, plans, and proposals prior to implementation. The committee is made up of a variety of individuals who represent education, who represent economy, who represent finance, who represent banking, who represent community long-standing members. We have individuals from their 30s up to beyond 30, we'll say. It's comprised of people who've been very committed for a long time to the work of the city. I think we've got an excellent committee. Our meetings are held on a consistent basis so that as much as possible to provide an equitable opportunity for community members to be present. We meet the second Thursday of every odd month at New Song Community Church on Russell and MLK. And for those who cannot make it, then all meetings are recorded by Open Signal and can be found on Channel 30. Our goal is to make sure that people are accessing. It is important that this process be transparent, that it be accountable, that it be engaging, and that the community understands this is about fighting for the determinations and the decisions that were made in the original as a result of the original community engagement, the forums that were held. And you've heard me say it repeatedly over and over again that the promises that have been made have to be the promises that are kept. That's our focus. So here are some of the strategies that were put in place. Strategy number one was preventing displacement as it relates to home repair. And this map that you're looking at gives you an example or identifies all of the people who've received repair. The purple are grants, and the blue are loans. And that's within the interstate urban renewal area. And the study area. Thank you very much. Another strategy that was talked about is the ADU, or Accessory Dwelling Unit Program. We had significant concerns as an oversight committee related to some of the implications around the ADU program. And at this point, think it needs some more baking, some thorough thinking through all of the impacts. There are so many various elements that are connected to the ADU program, and I'd be more than happy to elaborate around that if there are questions.
Could you give us a couple of examples?
Yeah. Okay. At the time when it was talked about, the discussion was in regard to the accessory dwelling units being in basements. And so not looking at the possibility of using garages. And so how then would that impact a homeowner if they're going to have to open up their basement to others? How does that impact in terms of that homeowner now becoming a business owner and the education associated with that? What are the tax implications that are associated with that? And so there were just some, and other elements I could continue to elaborate on, but there were just some questions that came up that we thought needed to be more thoroughly investigated and considered before we could say yes or no related to that. And then, you know, is it a wealth creation strategy? Is it a, what's the purpose behind it? Another strategy that is a part of our oversight is the creation of new homes. In regard to that, as you know, the interstate urban renewal area is a hot market. Home prices are increasing significantly on a regular basis, and so we've thought it necessary to change the boundary, to extend the boundary area to the study area to give a greater opportunity for people who have been impacted to have an opportunity to purchase homes. We also increased the subsidy from what was originally $65,000 that became $80,000 that now is $100,000 to support and help people to secure homes. And then we also increased the subsidy for development of new units from $100,000 to $125,000. Strategy number three as it relates to creating rental homes. This gives you an idea of the projects that are happening, who the project sponsors are, where it is located, and the number of units associated with each project. And I won't talk through each of those, but it's over 500 units. Now, on top of all of that work, and Mary, you just spoke to it, is the preference policy. Everything that's happening in terms of how dollars are being allocated and spent are being filtered through a preference policy. The main concept behind the preference policy is to give opportunity to the families who were once in North and Northeast Portland, who've been displaced and or gentrified, to give them an opportunity of preference associated with their geography to return. Now, I'd love for it to be just the families who were impacted, you get a chance to come back. We know that HUD would overturn that. We understand that our federal government would not back it. And so the policy then has been established to be supported. It is the only policy that has been supported, and we're super excited about that, that the heartbeat around helping the families who've been impacted, they at least have a way to be supported to take advantage of the opportunities of returning. On the next slide, here's an example of how the policy is being implemented or how it's being the impact that it's having. So on the home ownership, on the first round, that's the green box on your left side. The AH Collaborative, which is the African-American Alliance of Home Ownership, which involves Proud Ground, involves Habitat for Humanity, and a few other nonprofits who are part of that. You see the available slots, the amount of people who are referred, et cetera, et cetera. And then the other slot is PCRI. On the right-hand side, which you have are rental units, and specifically Garlington Place, which has 31 units. There were 736 applicants for 31 units. Of those applicants, 15 could identify eminent domain. I think it speaks to the fact for part of the conversation that's happened is, do people want to move back? Here's an example. Yes, they did.
So by that, you mean people who were evicted because of eminent domain?
People who were impacted, absolutely, yep. And so 15 could prove eminent domain. And then down below, you see a chart of the ethnicity of those who responded. A little hard to see. So this is the work that the Oversight Committee is engaged with. Again, we could drill down into specifics and particulars, but I believe we can each read, and I don't want to insult us with that. I do want to identify, though, that while the work is vital and necessary, and I don't remember the gentleman's name who came before and handed out the book.
John Hollister.
I couldn't have paid him to do a better job of setting up the reality of the weight of this work. So in light of that, there are things we're concerned about. We're concerned that, again, the promises made are promises kept, and we want to highlight some of those. And Dr. Bates, if you will speak to.
Sure. Thank you so much. And let me just take a moment to say thank you for the opportunity to be part of this committee and this important work. Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for appointing me to this committee, and I've continued under Mayor Wheeler. And particularly thank you to folks here in the Black community. I'm not from Portland, and people have entrusted me to be part of this group of people who are holding this, you know, very deeply valued space and this history and families really lives as we go forward, and I take that very seriously. It's really critical with this engagement that we continue in our practices, I think, around transparency, openness, and access to information about this set of programs. Certainly to ensure that folks have the right expectations and understandings of things like timelines for construction, when they can anticipate seeing units on the ground, because it has been a couple of years. We feel that it's very critical to have a deep community engagement around budgeting out the remainder of the TIF funds as the ICURA comes to an end. Where are we going next in the big picture with these funds? We also have, our oversight committee has representation on the Hillblock Site Project Working Group, and I believe I can speak for everyone in our oversight committee in saying that we think that's a very critical moment to not only value community history, but to make sure that Black Portlanders are emplaced in Northeast Portland with opportunities for economic development as well as housing, and that we're really insistent on carrying those principles forward into the Broadway corridor, the post office site, and the Rose Quarter, both sites of African-American history and displacement caused by policies in this community. To speak a bit to our assessment around the preference policy and the specific housing programming, as Bishop Holt mentioned, as Mayor Wheeler mentioned, the preference policy is really an innovative new practice. It's an opportunity. It's being talked about nationally. It's being talked about internationally as an opportunity to think about how to repair displacement, particularly that has been driven by public policy. And of course, it's been well publicized here as well by the Housing Bureau's efforts, and therefore it needs to be on point. In our rental projects, we again want to make sure we're communicating timelines and opportunities so that folks are understanding when they will be able to access these possible opportunities. But we also have concerns about changes to some projects that seem to be in the pipeline, for example, around reducing bedroom size to 0 and 1 bedrooms. We are building affordable housing for the very long term here. Housing is a very durable good, and we want to ensure that it accommodates families today and will continue to be part of that crucial infrastructure for family housing into the future with additional bedroom sizes. On the homeownership side, as we know, there have been more significant challenges in that program. We have, I think, diverse opinions on the oversight committee about the models and tools that can be used, but we all agree that homeownership is a really critical response for the African-American families whose exclusion from access to this opportunity is at the root of wealth gap, of housing instability, and is very deeply, deeply connected to the spirit of fair housing and civil rights. This is the 50th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act, as well as a deeply meaningful anniversary around the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. And we see access to home ownership for Black families as deeply tied to that cause and that movement. And we therefore are deeply concerned about the lack of progress in this area. First, a sort of limited targeting of home repair for maintaining homeownership for African American homeowners who do remain in the community. Second, that there have been very, very few successful buyers. There has been quite a bit of confused and delayed reporting on progress and the specific challenges that are happening in organizations and for families, and sort of a lack of real clear solution strategies being offered in that communication. We have continued to press the point that down payment assistance loans ought to be forgiven over time in order to give people the best chance for maintaining their homes and building home equity. And finally, we want to ensure additional oversight in the relationship and communications between partners and families to make sure that people who are accessing this opportunity are being treated with great dignity and are being responded to in a timely manner and are having the best possible experience in what can often be a stressful but is also a very exciting moment and opportunity. So we've been talking through those challenges over the last few oversight committee meetings. We've heard some responses from the Housing Bureau. I think we're very eager to hear about the particulars of how those programs will be either modified or how we'll go forward with sort of new formats working toward the same vision.
Thank you, Dr. Bates.
Thanks, Dr. Bates.
So our commitment is to resolve each issue. That's what we'd like to see happen. Our desire is that there's strategic, intentional, purposeful, and expeditious implementation that's helping families get from one place to another. The hope is one thing, and hope is great. but to take a moment and to step into a little different zone that I function from. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 12 says, "Hope deferred makes the heart sick." And the idea of sick is that it makes you spin in a circle downward. So to live in hope is great, but hope must be fulfilled. And that's what we want to see happen. Those are our concerns. And we're looking forward to how we strategically implement the answers. I want to say thanks to Dr. Bates for your involvement and engagement, your thoughtful work. Thank you to Sheila Holden, who's a member of our Oversight Committee, for being here this morning. Again, we're made up of a significantly talented and committed group of people who really want to see the things we've said come to pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you so much for your work. Are there specific things that you need from the city in order to take this work forward?
I think part of, there are two specific things that I'd like to see happen, and Dr. Bates alluded to one, and I'll let you respond as well. The first one is the helping us to engage with the necessary partners, all of the players, from the Portland Housing Bureau to the nonprofit partners, to make sure that we are connecting in a manner that is moving forward. Our goal is not to throw anyone under the bus. That's not the effort. The effort is to make sure that people have what they need, that we're having the authentic conversations. We're dealing with the real issues, whoever's responsible for whatever delays in any in any areas, if that's permitting, if that's we don't know, but that's where the city can weigh in. I think that's one of the areas where the city can weigh in. The other area, and it's not specifically in this report, but obviously we need more funding. We need more dollars. It would be great to really think about strategic ways to leverage private funding, to leverage foundation funding, and or other resources to really address what is significant. As you know, Portland is the most gentrified city in the nation. And so if we're going to do something about this, I think it's time for us to really ramp up our effort and take it on to address it. So thank you for asking.
Thank you.
If I could add to that, I pushed hard in Salem for the passage or the referral of a constitutional amendment to the voters. And that constitutional amendment would allow us to take housing dollars and leverage them with private sector dollars for exactly this kind of a purpose. And while I can't sit here today and advocate one way or the other, I will just say I pushed really hard for it, and it's a really important tool that we don't currently have. So I hope people give it a good, hard look when the voter's pamphlet comes their way on this particular issue. Did you have another question?
Yeah, I'd like Dr. Bates to give her input into what else can the city and the council as individuals or a whole, what can we do to help?
Well, I think we've talked a lot about resources, and certainly resources are very critical. I think, outside of these kind of programmatic fixes that we've been talking about, I think having just being very clear about what the work is that's happening here, what the strategies are that are critical. This is costly work because Northeast Portland is an expensive part of town. Mm-hmm. But yet we can't let that go. We can't let it go because of the historical racial exclusion and segregation that's happened in the city, but we also can't let it go because it's not a good idea to allow large portions of our city to be simply inaccessible to people who are not greatly wealthy. It's not a good infrastructure for health and resilience, I don't believe, in a community. So I think just to be very clear in our conversations about this larger affordable housing topic, which you've been talking about this morning, that this work in a gentrified neighborhood is vital.
And thank you. My last question is, I was at the Parks Board yesterday where Rakiya Adams and Zari Santner did a presentation on the Albina Project, and I wondered how much overlap there is between your committee's work and their planning and other things that we need to be aware of that we're thinking of now that would either help or burden or continue to burden the Albina community.
You want to respond first?
I mean, it's a marvelous plan, isn't it? the Albina vision. I would say that I think that speaks to my comment that our group and the folks in the community who come routinely to our meetings very much understand the history of the full Albina area down to the Rose Quarter. That was also a site of black homes, of black businesses that were demolished for the Coliseum, that were demolished for a freeway. It's not unique to Portland. It's happened in every city in America. But we may have some unique opportunities to do something about it and to have a very dynamic plan and people behind it. It's time, you know, it should be taken very seriously and seen as a connection and a continuation of this project.
So either directly and or indirectly, we have levels of crossover. If it is the Community Development Initiatives Oversight Committee of Prosper Portland, or now the Hill Block work that the city, Prosper Portland Legacy, is involved in, the Albina Plan or the Albina Vision or the Broadway Corridor, you name it, there is this overlap, because the reality is we're defining geography by streets. That isn't how it plays out in real life, right? It isn't that if I live in the Broadway corridor, I don't go to this place or that place. So it's incumbent upon us to take an aggressive or an assertive role to make sure we're having conversations. And either our oversight committee has representation in these various groups, or I'm engaged in communication with the various groups, because the decisions that are for the best practice and the best opportunity, it's intelligent of us to think together and strategize together to see how we can supplement, complement, support the work. So there's a real continuity, and hopefully even a continuity of design and look and structure and feel and function and flow. So that's a great question. We are doing our part. I think that supporting from your side, commissioners, can help us to make that successful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor?
Oh, Commissioner Udaly, sure.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for the presentation. I can dig these numbers up later, but I think it might be useful for the purpose of this conversation to get a sense of how many individuals or households had we hoped to have served by this point in the process, and how many have been served. Whether I know homeownership, it's 4, which is quite low.
And
but there's also
the hope
rental.
Was for 65 homeowners.
Okay.
At this point, we officially now have 5. Yeah.
And then on the rental side, did we have numbers or?
Oh gosh, I don't remember them off the top of
that's
my head.
Fine.
They're in the.
So the couple areas that I'm particularly interested in. Is the home repair loans.
Yep.
As commissioner of BDS, you know, we are bringing back our Get Legal program, where we're going to be working with property owners to address code violations and get their properties safe and habitable. Is this a staffing capacity issue as far as the low number of dollars that went out the door? Because I've seen families having to crowdfund on the internet to do,
wow,
you know, elderly homeowners to do essential repairs to keep their homes or to refinance their homes. And we've also looked at maps of liens, and we unsurprisingly see a significant number of liens in rapidly gentrifying areas, and those liens are typically going to be on older, lower income homeowners.
Yeah.
So we're really committed to making sure that we're not driving displacement through BDS, but those home loans would sure help in our mission. So
I appreciate you asking the question. What brought us to this? How did we have that in terms of our report, why were the numbers as they are? I think that a good response to that will be from the Portland Housing Bureau to be able to answer the specifics as to why, and then how do we adjust that going forward. And I'm extremely pleased to hear that it is something that matters and that you're thinking through how to best serve these longstanding members, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about a neighborhood. Pardon me for a second. We're talking about a neighborhood that's been absolutely decimated. Economic opportunities wiped, families and relationships separated, and I don't think we can be casual about this. I think we need to be intentional and passionate as it relates to this work. So.
And aggressive on the timeline.
Yeah.
Another option, Dr. Bates.
Likewise, I think it's wonderful to hear that this program, the Get Legal program, would be sort of resurrected and that you are having an equity lens in mind in doing so. I know you have a wonderful equity manager at BDS. I cannot emphasize enough the engagement with families who are long-standing owners in Northeast Portland who may have significant home repair needs, liens, and have had unpleasant interactions with the bureaucracy around code violations. Will take some very deep work to consider how to engage effectively with those families. The trust issues, the understanding issues about what will lead someone into an enforcement path versus a remediation path. Communication, I mean, you cannot make communication clear enough. And sort of engaging with some trusted organizations, I would suggest, and folks who can sort of guide and help to communicate that will be very critical.
I appreciate that. Another item I just want to bring up, and we don't have to really delve into it, but I haven't really heard it discussed in the context of this strategy, is could we or should we be working to preserve succession of ownership within families? I have now witnessed two of my African-American neighbors, one in Irvington and one in Woodlawn, lose homes that were inherited, that were at some point paid in full through what I think is unnecessary and heartbreaking foreclosure process. So I'm very interested in what we could be doing because it's complicated. You have maybe, one surviving parent leaves a home that has appreciated massively in value to multiple children. None of them may have the resources to buy the home. It's just, and they end up losing this asset. And I've never owned a home. It makes me sick to think that someone, could lose something that valuable. So I just wanted to put that out there. And then, point of clarity, have we been allowing people to look outside the interstate URA so far, or we're going to allow them to look outside the interstate URA for the home ownership opportunities?
We made that adjustment and expanded the boundary, and so that is something we are recommending to be approved. That hasn't been implemented. Is that correct?
So let me just clarify. When we initially did the RFP, Leslie Goodlow from the Housing Bureau, for the $5 million for home ownership, we limited it to a study area within the URA so that we could not use the funds in the entire URA. And the committee recommended and it was approved for us to be able to use those down payment assistance loans throughout the whole URA, not just within the study area, because we were finding that the study area was the most expensive. And so folks were having a difficult time to buy a house and use the down payment assistance just because the prices and folks had cash. So North Portland had many more homes available within a price point that folks could use the down payment assistance. We voted on that this year.
And then the last thing I'll put out there is I have a particular interest in ADUs and how we can make that opportunity accessible to as many homeowners as possible. So when that conversation comes back around, especially once the residential infill project policies are implemented, I'd love to talk to you about that.
Perfect.
Because I'm really excited about the potential, but I'm concerned that it's only going to be available to relatively affluent homeowners if we don't make some big stuff happen.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank Dr. Holt, Dr. Bates, Sheila Holden, and others for serving on the and leading from day one the Northeast Housing Strategy Oversight Committee. I think when we first, back in 2014, when I directed the Housing Bureau to come up with a preference policy and directed my housing advisor, Shannon Callahan, to make that happen, Dr. Holt, you were there from the inception. I think, you know, it's hard work. I mean, it's fraught with peril in terms of legal definitions that can do it. Yeah. And it's taken some intentionality to really to even get to where we are right now, and there's still a long ways to go. But I think your oversight, you know, as you said, holding our feet to the fire has really been successful. I mean, we have a long way to go, but at least now I think the preference policy is known by people who have been displaced, witnessing by 736 applicants for the Garlington Place apartments. That's a lot of people knowing about the preference policy being there. So that's a start. That's a crucial start. People need knowledge of it. And I think when we first announced it and implemented it, it was sort of dismissed by many in the community, I think, as tokenism. And, you could probably look at it right now and still say it's tokenism, but I think we're on a path, and we're only going to succeed on that path with your continued oversight to make sure that we, the city, and the Housing Bureau get this right, because it is so important, and it's such an important part of our history of Portland, as John Hollister so well articulated earlier today. This is something that we need to be very intentional to overcome. And so I just want to say we got to work ahead of us, but I think we're up for the challenge.
So let me jump in for a sec. I want to join in thanking the committee for their excellent work. But let's be clear. The committee is an oversight committee. You are not charged with building the housing. You're not charged with working through the regulatory problems. You are not charged with going out and collecting the money. You're charged with providing oversight on a program. And I don't remember the last time we had a report come to council that documented so many failures in a program that you are trying to oversee, and processes and other lapses that are making it very difficult for you to do your job. And you have been very diplomatic in your presentation to council, but the mayor began by saying how disappointed he was in this report, and I've just taken sort of the highlights of some things you put in here. Yeah. As I read this report, there is a lack of clarity on some of the policy questions, and I'd hate to see us come back a year from now and continue to have a lack of clarity on policy questions. I mean, that's something that we've asked you to weigh in on, and we need to call the question on a couple of things. One of them is accessory dwelling units. Two is the scope of the REACH project, and has it changed beyond what was anticipated? Three is some other very thoughtful suggestions you put in here. There's questions for me around staff capacity and communication. There's questions about, have we given you and the staff enough flexibility to adapt in real time to things? Because you shouldn't have to come back to council every few weeks for a change in whatever. There should be an ability to adapt to change circumstances. You've had turnover on your committee, and you're a 10-person committee, but in the last year you brought three new people on. That's disruptive by definition. The economic circumstances on the ground have changed dramatically. We've been hearing from the development community that costs are going through the roof, that we're at 150 to 200% capacity in the building trades. We're bidding up the price of construction materials, of labor, of land. So as you said, Dr. Holt, you know, money is a big issue, because what was envisioned in 2014 is now much more expensive to accomplish for the very same plan that was put on the table. Mm-hmm. I could go on and on, but I think you've done a laudable job in presenting all of the challenges that you're facing.
Thank you.
And what I want to avoid is coming back next year and reading a report that says we still have those challenges. And when you were asked by two colleagues, you know, essentially that what I think is the most important question, what has to change? What do you need to be successful? You know, you mentioned communication and you mentioned resources. I want to ask you to be even bolder in coming back to us with suggestions. For example, we're in the middle of a budget process. Does the Housing Bureau have to hire another person to oversee this project? Because last time I checked, over the last 10 years, we keep asking the Housing Bureau to do more and more things, including producing reports and overseeing projects. But if you look at their staff, it has remained pretty static. It may even be on a downward arc. So there's a limit to what they can do with existing resources. And I have great confidence in the people at the Housing Bureau. But one of the things that you may be highlighting is we need another project manager.
Yeah.
That may be something specifically that you want to put on the table, and that's something we should take up at budget time. There may be you may need someone who is helping you close on certain issues. There's a whole host of issues in here that are still drifting, and you're struggling with it. Well, for God's sake, we don't want you to spend 10 more meetings over the next year just moving the ball a foot. We want you to be empowered to call the question, and as long as it's within the scope of your authority, have confidence that the Housing Bureau can implement it. So, and one other thing, Dr. Holt, you alluded to some of the frustrations that the committee felt around the progress of some of the developments. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's almost impossible to discern based on the data we've been given is what is actually the biggest obstacle or set of obstacles. Now, in our regular deliberations, when we do complicated things like technology oversight, we get a color-coded chart that tells us in each of the categories whether we're on track or we're failing, and then it helps explain it. It's in red, yellow, and green. And you know what? For those of us who are very, very busy up here, red, yellow, and green is an extremely useful exercise. Because then we get to say, why is this still red? And if it turns out there's a backlog at the Bureau of Development Services, or there isn't enough financing, or there's some other problem, then we can be partners in helping to solve that. But right now, the report doesn't actually give us a lot of detail on what are the roadblocks. And I share your frustration. And you want to know what those roadblocks are, and you also want to have someone accountable to clearing those roadblocks. So, a couple suggestions. Number one, I hope within the next 30 days, if you have additional suggestions for what you need, what's on your wish list, that the committee will submit it to each of us. To the entire council.
Perfect.
And that includes whether you believe there has to be anything included in the budget that we are now crafting to help move this thing along. Number two, I would love your suggestions for how we can be more transparent about what are the obstacles in the way of some of the production goals that you've established. You've set audacious goals. We all understand that the market has changed. We understand they were low confidence goals. But what we don't know is which part of the equation is getting in your way. And I would encourage the Housing Bureau to come up with a chart using the, and I see Director Callahan shaking her head, yes, a chart that literally has the red, yellow, green coding so we can all understand with you what's the hang up. And if it's a hang up that one of us is responsible for in our leadership overseeing a bureau, then you can legitimately reach out to us and say, fix that. If it's a problem in the marketplace because the costs are becoming prohibitive and it comes back to you need more resources, that's a conversation we should have. But I, as I look at this report, I'm not entirely clear about what those headwinds are, but I think all of us up here want to be part of the solution. And again, I want to go back to a fundamental point. You're an oversight body. You're not the body we designated to sort of deliver the product. So you are giving us a sober report that says we're making a little bit of progress, but we're not making the progress that you'd like to see. And I think we need a little more information about what it is that needs to change for us to see more progress. And I know we're all going to be very polite about this conversation, and we're all very diplomatic, but the report is actually pretty detailed in areas of that I can feel the frustration in the report. And I hope you'll see us as your partners in fixing those problems so that when we come back next year, we can celebrate, you know, even more progress towards the goals that you've established. And if problems have come up along the way, we don't have to have elaborately bureaucratic, complicated mechanisms to make sure you get the resources and tools you need. There should be enough flexibility built into this.
Appreciate that.
And then finally, just to the conversation that you had with one of my colleagues about the new Albina vision. I've been on the council for 10 years, and somewhere in this building there is a closet that has all the visions for the Albina district and for the Rose Quarter. And probably there's some plants that have already rooted in the dust that has settled because they just stack up. Each one was well-intentioned. Each one at some point had a constituency. And 10 years later, we've actually done nothing in the Rose Quarter. Now, Rakaya and a group of well-intentioned people have come in with a bold vision that connects the Rose Quarter to historic Albina, connects the community to the river, does some justice work that's very important. And just speaking for myself, I've concluded that the only way that vision is going to see the light of day is if we create a separate public authority to drive that vision. I think it is beyond the capacity of Prosper Portland to handle that, and I think for historic reasons it would be a mistake to ask them to drive that vision. I think the council in the next year has to decide whether we are going to be bold and establish a public authority. In big cities across the country, public authorities have driven big visions. And this one I don't think will happen unless we create a separate public authority with a different governance structure that allows this vision to move forward. So that's just one commissioner's view on that question. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. If I could just say two things. We have no reticence, being very specific, around what our concerns are and or what we think could be solutions. You echo very clearly the frustration, and what we've been trying to discern and uncover or discover is where are the roadblocks, who is responsible for those roadblocks, hence what you see in the report. So, and I think you'll get some of those answers in a moment with some of the strategies. And then lastly, I echo and agree that if we're going to move this needle forward, it's going to take some aggressive action to do so. What time is causing is more delay and more displacement if we don't do some things differently. So thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you. Leslie, did you have anything to add? If not, I want to bring the interim housing director forward.
Nope, I'm just here to support them and answer questions they couldn't answer. So Shannon okay. wanted me to stay.
Why don't you hang out? Thank you both very much. Again, thank you for your leadership. Dr. Bates, thank you as well. Sheila, thank you for continuing this. So Commissioner Fish spoke eloquently, and both of the bureaus he mentioned are mine. The buck stops with me on both the Housing Bureau, and it stops with me on Prosper Portland with regard to the development of the Rose Corridor. And I want to be crystal clear. There will not be another report like the one you just saw. This was created 3 years ago. In 3 years, five families have found housing through this program. In that regard, I don't see how I can sit here with a straight face and call it anything other than an abject failure. And I agree with you, Commissioner, that it is not the failure of the Oversight Committee. It is our failure that after now three reports, we have very little progress to show for it. There will not be a fourth report like this because I'm going to hold everybody accountable for ensuring that we see good progress. Just as a side note with regard to the Rose Corridor, I want you to know that the conversation is already underway and there already is a consideration of an authority model to direct or at least help direct the development of the Rose Corridor. We have many other master planning exercises that we're undertaking, including the Broadway Corridor and other projects throughout the city. I share your concern about capacity, and I will make sure that as we make decisions around that, we will include the council and the public in those conversations. They are in a stage that I would describe as early. So, interim director, first of all, I want to set the stage. You and I have had many conversations with Dr. Holt and others about this report since I first received a copy of it. I want to be crystal clear on the record. You have demonstrated to me beyond any doubt a strong commitment to making sure that this project goes forward and that it is successful. You have articulated to me your understanding that the rest of the country and others are watching our results on this project. Therefore, it is imperative that we be successful with this project. And I want to just make note of the fact, as Commissioner Saltzman did earlier, you were his point person on this project when you worked for Commissioner Saltzman. So you're not new to this game. The first issue that was mentioned was the delays in families becoming homeowners and slow production of homeownership units. What commitments can you make to us today?
First of all, I'd like to let you know that, as you have said, Mayor, that that I and we at the Housing Bureau are committed to getting this back on track. And as Dr. Holt alluded to, there's been some questions and concerns about who's responsible. We are. it's the housing bureau that's ultimately responsible. So I just want to let you know that, and that I clearly take that role very seriously, and so do all of my staff. In terms of home ownership, we made a commitment to 65 families and moving them into home ownership. We have chosen two different providers, a collaborative and PCRI, to provide
a
mix
what collaborative?
Of, I'm sorry, African American Alliance for Home Ownership Collaborative, with that includes Proud Ground, NAIA, and Habitat for Humanity. And then we also have PCRI, who is building 22 homes.
And Hacienda is part of that as well?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. One of the things that we are concerned about is that we have two different partnerships, two different lists, and we want to make sure that we are examining ourselves, the Bureau, the status of every single a preference policy household in the pipeline to see if there is anything that we can do to move those families quicker. That means new strategies, new tools. For us, that also means talking to the developers that receive the homeownership tax exemption program about possibly acquiring those houses sooner. It means providing regular and clear and consistent quarterly reporting of the type that you indicated, Commissioner Fish, regarding not just the development process, but where all of these families are, what are any of the concerns that we have, what can we do.
And who will that information be provided to, and when will it be provided? How often?
It'll be provided on a quarterly basis, publicly, and to the Oversight Committee.
Thank
so
you.
Thank you. I did want to say that we have been, and I was in contact last week with Director Esau from BDS and requested assistance from her with priority permitting for the homeownership units and process, and she was very amenable to that, and I appreciate that help in advance. I think it's going to be important that we do have a city effort to keep on track. That was my response to homeownership, Mayor. Did you want me to provide?
There is one more thing I would like. Can you make any commitments today numerically around homeownership units created or loans proffered? Are we in a position to do that yet?
I am not. I am not.
When will we be?
I will be ready to do that next month with the Oversight Committee at the May meeting. As I've said, we have staff right now looking at the files of everyone in the preference policy list to ensure where we are. The development of the units are not projected until later in 2018 and 19 by our partners, but we want to make sure those units stay on track and the families are matched up.
Good. I find nothing motivates a coalition more than concrete goals to which we will all be held accountable.
We will set those goals Good. With the Oversight Committee in May.
Good. Do that and add 10%. With okay. regard to the loan assistance structure, Dr. Bates had suggested a modification of that structure. What say you?
We agree. We wholeheartedly agree with the recommendation of the Oversight Committee. We believe that a family that has resided in their home for a period of 30 years should have the down payment assistance completely forgiven. We're recommending a structure that starts with forgiveness at year 15. We'll be bringing that specific proposal to both the Northeast Oversight Committee in May and our Portland Housing Advisory Commission, as we would intend to make that a program change available citywide, and then we would bring that back to City Council for your approval.
Very good. Commissioner Udaly had articulated a potential strategy around standards in rental units, and I want you to know, Commissioner, that's well received over here. Thank you for that. There was also some questions about the loans or the outcomes for home repair loans. We are in the budget process, as Commissioner Fish rightly pointed out. Where do you stand on that?
So there are two different products that are offered to homeowners in the URAs, one of which is a home repair loan, and one is a home repair grant. The grants are smaller dollar amounts, usually around $10,000, that are particular to access issues or issues with seniors remaining in their homes, or disability ramps, things of that type. We do not have a problem with getting those dollars out the door through our partners. We have had a dip in the numbers of families of communities of color that received that program last year. We know that we have proven methods that have given us better outcomes in the past that we did not use last year. We will be reinstituting those and talking with the committee because we do have proven ways. With the home repair loan program, which is usually about a $50,000 loan, these are much more significant, obviously, repairs to homes. We have staff that is capable of doing about 50 of those each year, and we have three of those staff. We anticipate doing and are on track to do 50 loans for next year. Quite frankly, we over-budgeted, and that's what the committee is seeing, is we over-budgeted to a level that we are not capable of reaching outcomes, and it was, quite frankly, a budget mistake on our part. And we have rectified that.
Okay, and that will be rectified. It is rectified through the Bureau's requested budget?
Yes.
Very good. With regard to the Argyle development at Reach,
yes.
This has been a very complicated project. As I understand it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of that has to do with changing market forces over the last couple of years. Construction costs have gone up. There is a gap that is formed as a result in part of market forces and part of federal policy. What are we going to do over the course of the next year to get that project moving?
So what we have is the REACH has submitted an application to the state for gap funding. If that is successful, I think we have a project that is capable of moving forward on a quick timeline. Though the Oversight Committee has raised concerns about the number of family size units and overall design of that project, but I think that's a much simpler conversation if we have a gap already identified and filled. If they are not successful in their application, we have asked them to present a balanced budget with the amount of money that they were awarded in the NOFA. That would likely result in a significant decrease in numbers, and we would be proposing to bring those options back to the Oversight Committee. Our first goal would, of course, be to get this program moving, but sometimes you also must make tough choices about not proceeding with the program if the gap is too large.
Right, and the hard work here is going to be to reach a consensus agreement that is probably going to be different than the original vision based on changes in the market. And the key here is we need to engage with the committee and find out where that pragmatic compromise is that gets this project moving.
Yes.
Great. Anything else, colleagues? Commissioner
Mayor,
Fish.
Couple,
yes, sir.
Director Callahan, I met yesterday with the home builders, and I learned some interesting things. They explained to me some of the challenges they're facing in this market right now. Rising interest rates. I think the Fed has increased rates twice and has signaled they could go higher, so their interest rate environment's changed. Cost of land is going up, affecting the cost of projects. Cost of construction, both in terms of materials and labor, has gone up dramatically, in part because there's so many projects going on right now bidding up the cost that people are getting bids from construction companies. They're well above what we saw 2 or 3 years ago.
Yes.
And there's, frankly, some concern that we're going to have we're going to go into a cyclical shift in the marketplace. Because, after all, housing is not immune from cycles, and that we may be, just beginning in a kind of a slight turndown. So there's a lot of factors that they're weighing in terms of, their work. That's one of the reason I mention that is that I think uniquely this is an area where we have to have an asterisk next to our goals and say they are low to medium confidence goals. Because, frankly, as smart as you are and as capable as you are, you can't control the macro market forces that are affecting all of these projects, that are affecting individual consumer decision-making and the like. So I think I like the idea of resetting the numbers so that they are, achievable.
Mm-hmm.
But since we in generally talk about low, medium, and high confidence, I think we have to be clear with people that we're talking low to medium confidence, because we're not smarter. We can't anticipate all the market headwinds that we're going to be dealing with. And we should be clear to people about that. In the next report we get, is it possible that we could get it color-coded so that, for example, on the projects in the pipeline, we could see, for example, is it on time? Is it on budget? If it's not on budget, what are the factors that are driving cost overruns? Is there a regulatory hurdle that is slowing things down? I think we could come up with, you know, three or four generic categories and then color code them. Is that something that you think you can do?
I'd be, yes, Commissioner, we committed to